Welcome to the Reach the Stars podcast, a collection of conversations with cool people who do cool things. Brought to you by Papercraft Miracles. Each week, we'll bring you inspiring stories of persistence, passion, and purpose. With your host, Jonna Willoughby-Lore.
Welcome to the Reach the Stars podcast. I am your host, Jonna Willoughby-Lore. Today, my guest is Roberta Weber. She is a mother, a wife, a healing practitioner, a scientist, an expat of the States, an entrepreneur, and many, many other things. I am going to throw it over to her to tell you a little bit more about herself. But thank you so much for being here today.
Jonna, I am so, and it's Jonna, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I'm so thrilled to be here. Thank you so, so much. Yeah, I feel a little bit kind of like excited and nervous about it. But I am here because you wanted to talk to somebody about transgenerational or intergenerational trauma. And that's what I have spent a lot of time investigating, how people have been doing this over millennia. Really, it's only kind of modern medicine that didn't recognize that there was such a thing as generational trauma until very, very recently. And we started to understand the molecular basis of inheritance of traits, in a sense. Now, many moons ago, when I did my molecular biology training, we were taught that's impossible. You don't inherit traits. And yet, you know, a lot of us will recognize behaviors and, you know, patterns of life that seem almost inescapable within family lines. So I kind of always knew that there was something that must be there, but, you know, I'm a good girl and I like accept things hook, line, and sinker. And so I just would always be like, no, that doesn't happen. Right. For me, though, I started going into alternative medicines. I started first with acupuncture because I wasn't getting answers that I needed. And so I went to the side of Wu, and it suits me. It suits my personality a hell of a lot more than being in a lab. So at one point, kind of when the science and was waking up to this idea of the intergenerational trauma, I started thinking, well, you know, the energy medicines, which have always recognized these things, you know, have been working with this for years. So I might be able to address this better in my clients if I study those methods really directly that absolutely are keyed into that. So that opened the Pandora's box, and I studied, I think, five other modalities besides acupuncture after that, in order for me to kind of get almost like, you know, all the different layers. And hopefully the idea is that I would develop the common ground and be able to work out how it is that we can affect these changes, how we can change this, you know, this kind of straitjacket that we inherit. And so I've been working in that for, you know, a couple of years, refining. I'm finally at a place where I feel like I've got a coherent enough way of dealing with it that I'm starting to create courses and work in groups, etc., instead of just my one-to-ones.
Cool. So my main interest in talking about generational trauma in the first place was it through this show, over and over and over again, as I was interviewing different people and talking about their stories of their lives and overcoming obstacles and how they got where they are, it just kept coming back over and over again to people talking about the way that they were raised and their childhood and things that happened to them and the way that their parents were or the way that their parents weren't, and how that affected them. And I've always been really drawn to people's stories of childhood and adolescence and what their memories are and how that makes them who they are as an adult. And the concept of generational trauma was new to me, but apparently like the concept of it wasn't really new to me. I just didn't call it that. And so I have long since written poetry about my childhood, which was a really interesting way to grow up. My parents were both married to other people when I was born, so that really informs a lot of my lifestyle, I guess, as an adult, my personality as an adult. And in a situation for a lot of people, if they had a baby while they were married to other people, it probably would be pretty bad for said baby in most cases, because, you know, a lot of people can't kind of get over their own crap for the sake of the kids. And I was really, really lucky that even though everyone involved got divorced and it wasn't really easy, that all of the different people, all the parents that I had, all decided to be my parent, as opposed to everyone shirking responsibility and saying, I want nothing to do with this kid. So I grew up with my mom, who was a single mom, and then her ex-husband got remarried. So he was my dad on my birth certificate, but he wasn't really my dad. And then his new wife. So I had my dad and my stepmom, and then my biological dad got remarried. So I had my real dad and my stepmom over there. So I had five parents my whole childhood. And I got to, like, all five of my parents had been divorced at least once before I was born. So it's just really interesting to learn about how all these different people lived their lives and how their relationships with other people didn't work. And then they found new relationships that either worked or then didn't work some more. I mean, my dad is on his third marriage right now, and he turned 80 this year. And it's just, it's really interesting to kind of have lived three lives. And I was the oldest kid at one house, and the middle child at the other house, and the baby at the other house. So I kind of got to have all of those different experiences when most people, if they're lucky, have two different lives, you know, but most people really just get one. And so it's been interesting for me, but the older I get, the more I'm realizing that I also have been affected by all of those adults' traumas from their childhoods and the way that they chose to raise me from them. So when most people kind of get, like, messed up a little bit by one, maybe two parents, I've had, like, five people's mistakes kind of taking me over and kind of working with that. So it's been an interesting pandemic, kind of taking the time to reflect on that and see where it's affecting me.
And of course, you're a mom of two wee ones. And what my experience was, you know, as soon as those kids hit, you know, all of those kind of difficult or confusing experiences through childhood, which you just kind of accept, you know, all of that comes landing and rushing to you, because then you're at a point of forward facing. What am I going to take from this and actually enact in the life of the, you know, the future of this family, which is our children. So it comes crashing down pretty quickly when we haven't actually kind of done the work. So one of the things looking at, you know, that kind of experience is from a family constellation point of view, which is one of the modalities that I trained in, we kind of, it's quite remarkable. And I totally encourage you and anybody who's listening in the future, if you have dynamics within the family field that are still holding a charge that make life difficult for you, then standing within that field with a qualified practitioner who really walks you through the dynamics can be so illuminating for the various things that sometimes are ours, but more than not are dynamics that have been playing out for generations. And you can stand in the field of, for instance, your mother and start to feel the influences from all sorts of different things. There can be secrets, there can be the funding of children for lost children back in the field, you know, so for miscarriages or lost children, or, you know, even deaths on, you know, battlefields, etc. There's so many ways that our belonging can be really damaged through people kind of not doing the work, which is the, you know, what I talk about in my courses and when I work with folks. It's like, you know, this is emotional, intense work that we have to do if we don't want to pass this down. So you've got five different families of all those different things coming in. So for you, belonging is going to be massively important, and being able to just come back down and go, this is my belonging on the land. this is where I am able to be in form, and I am allowed to be here and a person. And through that allowance, I don't have to carry your rubbish or your crap or your promises that nobody ever did or your dreams that you never managed to do, which when we don't have belonging, it's like this kind of crazy energetic dowry system. We're like grabbing onto everything of like, oh, if I carry this for you, then I can belong in your family. And if I carry that for you, I can belong in your family. And then I will be safe, mm-hmm. but it's not true safety, because it's only safety through, through doing other people's work for them, which is never true. They still have to do that work no matter how long we carry it. So I hope that makes some kind of sense.
Yeah. It was really interesting as a kid. I mean, the first time I really noticed how different my parents were, was that at my biological dad's house, when we had corn on the cob, we were allowed to put our corn on the butter, like on the stick of butter, and roll the corn in it. And I did that at my other dad's house, and his wife like lost her mind because I put the corn on the butter. And I was like, whoa, man, I didn't know like that wasn't cool. I thought that's just what you did. Whoops, you know, and to like feel shamed by something that was totally fine to do in another environment. And then so I started really noticing like, oh, at this house, these are the rules and that's how you can act. And at this house, these are the rules and that's what you're supposed to be doing. And because I was this kind of part-time kid in all of these different families, I was this sort of interloper. And I had seven brothers and sisters, but I was an only child between my mom and my dad. And so I had siblings who weren't related to each other. And I've never been in the same room as all of my siblings at the same time in 38 years, like ever. So it's been really weird to say, like, I went Monday to Friday at my mom's house and then Friday night and Saturday at another dad's house and Saturday night and Sunday at the other dad's house. And so most of the places, my mom's house, I had my own room, but most of the time at my two dad's house, I didn't have my own room because, you know, they can't keep a spare bedroom for a kid who's there a day and a half a week. So I was like, oh, at this house, my bed is a mattress underneath my sister's bed. And when I come over, I pull it out and like, that's my space, but I don't have a dresser or like, I don't have clothes there and I have to bring all my stuff back and forth. And I think I got really used to just kind of fitting in where I could fit in and moving around a lot. And I was really used to that. And it's been really interesting since I got married. It's been, this year will be 10 years since we've been married, and first marriages for each of us. And it's just weird for me to live with the same people all the time. And I didn't realize how much having different places to go was part of my identity and part of what kind of made me feel normal and safe was being like, oh, this is hard here. I'm going to go over there. I'm going to go hang out with those people and kind of bail on this stuff. That's like, oh, that's too much for me. I'm going to take off and have these other places to go with other people and other experiences. And it's just, my husband and I, our upbringing is so different. His parents got married when they were 19 and 20. They have five kids. They're still married. Like, he's had no major crazy trauma ever in his life. He's never had his heart broken. Like, he's the unicorn person. Like, he's just not broken at all. And I've just had so many things happen to me that just broke me over and over and over again. And it's, I'm finding it difficult to be in a partnership with someone who isn't broken. Like, I don't want him to be broken, but I'm like, in so many ways, when, you know, it's the anniversary of my mom's birthday this week, and she would have been 83 or 73, and she died when I was 20. And so, you know, having so much of my life without my mother, and a lot of the time when she was my mother, she wasn't very good at being an adult. And so I kind of had that responsibility as a teenager to take care of my mother. And it's just, we just had such different lives. And he's like, oh, how come you don't want to just like be this normal work at home or stay at home mom that sometimes works? And I'm like, I don't know how to do that. It's been crazy. It's been,
wow. And it is, you know, first of all, congratulations for allowing yourself to marry that unicorn, really, because it is really hard. It's like, when you're used to just flitting around, and my story is very different, but also not that different. Like, I had my mom left when I was like two and a half. I was left with a father who was not the easiest person, let's just say. And, you know, could be, you know, it was the '70s, and it was, you know, it was quite pretty intense upbringing. And he died when I was 10, almost 11. I'd never seen my mom, didn't get on with my stepmom, you know, through my own like things, and not necessarily, you know, her fault per se. And then was shipped one day, like woke up, pack your bag, you're leaving, and went and lived with my mom, who I'd never met before. Right. So moved from California to Texas and just started a whole new life. Like, bingo. So there is that place of like, oh, well, if this doesn't work, then I'll just, you know, I'll go off somewhere else and I'll start a new life. I know how to do that. That's easy. Mm-hmm. Right. And yet, at, you know, one of the things I just said, because I'm writing this course and doing these videos, is like, wherever you go, there you are. And, you know, you still, the core of those needs and confusions and basic need for belonging is always going to follow you there. And you might be able to make pretty things or do, you know, lovely stuff all around it, but you still will have to do that work. Mm-hmm. You brought up the word shame, and in the family constellation therapy, that is the fear of, or the lack of belonging. And it's, you know, that sense of like, who am I? Who do I come from? Do I actually belong here? Am I allowed to belong here? Is this permanent? Is this not? What do I have to do to maintain this? Do I also have safety with this belonging? Mm-hmm. So, you know, all these things that you're recognizing, you know, if it makes you feel any better, like, you know, you're spot on with the places that need to heal. And the fact is actually there's a lot of healing that can be done more easily than you might think, but it does take work.
Yeah, I've been noticing a lot. It's funny that you talk about kind of belonging. And I remember as a kid thinking about how all the members of my family, like, I was never anybody's favorite because I wasn't around any of my family members all the time. And that I was kind of just like this interloper. And it carried forward where I noticed in like kindergarten that all the people that I considered to be my best friends considered someone else their best friend, and that type of thing. And I think that's definitely one of my kind of deep-seated roots of trauma is belonging somehow, and like having that person who, you know, considers me their favorite person, and to have that match up where like your favorite person is also their favorite person, and that kind of thing, definitely.
And like with you, what you're saying with your husband, you know, where there's the capacity to truly see you as well. So it's not just, you know, that, you know, he's agreed to this belonging. He says you're his, and you said he's yours, you know, that's a beautiful contract that you two have entered into. But it sounds like there's still a uncertainty, whether it's actual, you know, that he would feel he doesn't see part of you, but you feel, because of the traumas that you've experienced, that it's harder for him to see you fully, and those things can certainly be worked through as well. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot that can shift. You don't have to keep living with that. Is one of the things I really want you to understand.
Yeah, it's really interesting. My legal dad, my mom's ex-husband, gave me a box of letters that my mom wrote to him when she took off on their marriage to go live in California with another guy. But they were still married, and I guess they were still together. I didn't really know the details behind all of this. And he just gave me the box, and he's like, this is from a sad time in my life, but you might want to read them to learn more about your mom, so you can have these. And I started reading them earlier in the pandemic, and it just opened up like so much stuff, kind of hearing my mom's innermost thoughts while she was going through this really tumultuous time of her life and trying to figure out, you know, who she wanted to be as a person. She got married at 21 in 1969 because she thought that's what you were supposed to do. You know, like, and then the feminist revolution happened and she was like, wait, what? All these things are open to me and I'm stuck in, like, I want to be working full time and taking care of myself and doing things for myself, but I don't know how to do that. And she was kind of stuck in this. I did what I thought my parents wanted me to do. And she, through reading all these letters, it was kind of heartbreaking to see how she felt very trapped, but also that she wasn't prepared to be an adult. Like, she thought she was going to get married and someone was going to take care of her. And then she was like, wait, I don't want someone to take care of me, but I don't know how to take care of myself. And the things that she was struggling with at 26, 27 years old, of trying to quit smoking and trying to cook healthier food and learn how to do exercise and actually physically take care of her body and learn how to be an adult and pay bills and have a job and manage her money. And all of these things she was struggling to do at 26, she was still struggling to do at 54 when she died. And it's been really kind of eye-opening for me to realize that, kind of deep in my head, I still have a lot of those same kind of insecurities. And that I didn't realize how much those things were kind of in the background while I was doing everything that I'm doing. I mean, I run my own business now, but right now my husband is paying all of our bills and I'm reinvesting all of my profits into growing my company. And it's been hard for me to not have my own paycheck, you know, and to kind of feel like a burden, and I don't want to, but it's hard to kind of overcome that when I realized that she felt all the same things.
Those are really powerful, like, parallels between the two of you. And, you know, it begs the question about the, you know, women and coming into, yes, the feminist revolution, but what did we actually buy for ourselves? Did we actually manage to create more space or more freedom? And in a lot of ways, I think that wasn't the case. We actually created a no-win scenario. And I am absolutely a feminist. I don't want to in any way make out that I'm not. But that, you know, there's still a hell of a lot of work to be done for what it means to be a woman and how we can navigate in those channels of being a wife, having a career, being, you know, creative beyond just creating children. You know, all of these have very heavy influences, whereas, you know, in for a lot of men, not every, but for a lot of men, it's very, you know, everything's set up already. It's like, you know, it's like playing the game of life on a board, and, you know, it's all, whereas for us as women, we oftentimes have to create the game that we want to be moving through and then move through it. And that's pretty hard when your nervous system is fried, your all of your physiology is set at a place of like, shit, am I safe? Am I belonging? Am I okay here? Mm-hmm. So it's a big thing to navigate. Plus, again, coming back to the family constellation, there's a huge amount of kind of impetus and contracts that have been coming down for generations that say, you want a career, you don't get a family. Mm-hmm. That the two do not coexist in the same lifetime. And if you do, it's like there's a sense of betrayal coming down the family line, and almost that sense, you know what I mean, like, mm-hmm. women kind of being nasty to other women. And it's that thing of like, oh, you think you can have it all. And it's there's something in the field with that as well, that keeps us in that kind of almost gnawing off our own sense of self-worth and self-esteem in order to actually access our dreams. It's like we have to give up some internal part of ourselves to do that. And, you know, I'm here to say we don't. anymore. But, you know, but it does take work. And unfortunately, that's the crappy thing, is that, you know, you and I and so many people have gone through such trauma, and then we're turning around and saying, yeah, but you still got to do the work. You know, and you're like, hey, geez, can't I get a free pass? Get out of jail free card? Like, come on, man. Like, I've already gone through all this.
You're like, I don't have time to do the work.
Exactly.
I don't have time to like do said work, you know? It's
exactly. And yet, the true access to belonging, the true feeling of being resourced comes from doing that work. And so in a way, we can't not do it if we really want to create our dreams and to create the legacy, which is that we're not passing this chisel down to the next generations. And that's, you know, that's my why in so many ways. You know, there has been mental health disorders, alcoholism, you know, child abuse, all sorts of things that, you know, all landed on me, my brother, you know, and I'm like, I'm not doing this. I am not passing the, and it, you know, it's not, I am no angel as a mother, but equally there, you know, I've had to keep doing whatever I can to make sure that that gets released before I put that into, in a sense, into their milk, into, you know, what I'm feeding them as, you know, this is what real world is. Mm-hmm. Because real world can be a lot of things. And, you know, just like real world can be, you put the corn directly on the butter, and it can be not putting it on there. And both are right. Mm-hmm. But we can decide which ones we really want to go forward with.
Yeah. So
it's, you know, it's hard, and it's kind of exhausting as well.
And like, you know, obviously mom guilt is such a real thing. I talk about that on the show a lot. That,
what was that? Oh, mom guilt.
Mom guilt. Yeah. I mean, it's like, if you are a mother who works, then you're a crap mother and you're neglecting your kids for all the time that you spend at work. And you're also a crap employee or a worker or whatever, because you're not giving 100% of yourself to your job or whatever. But then if you stay at home and you don't have an income, then you're not contributing to your family and your work is worth nothing. And if you're kind of where I am in the middle, and I think you're there too, as like the work at home mom who is managing everything and running the company and trying to do this, it's, you're constantly doing all of the things at the same time. And it's part of what I have been reflecting on a lot, is that I grew up having three mothers almost all the time, and they were all, you know, good at certain things and not good at other things. And my mom really rebelled against the way that her mom raised her. Her mother was very, very strict, and her house was freaking spotless. And my mom
I think our mothers would have liked each other, or probably maybe hated each other, but like definitely had similar things. And she had me in 69 and she was 21. So it's very, very similar.
Yeah, my grandmother was just so strict in her household, and my mom was terrified of disappointing her mother enough where she, when she was 8 years old, she wanted to do ballet, and she had to wear special orthotic shoes because she just had, her feet were terrible and she definitely couldn't do ballet, but she snuck and borrowed a pair of toe shoes from a friend. And when she was home alone at eight, because, you know, it was the 60s, she put these toe shoes on, ran into the middle of her bedroom, jumped up and landed on her toes because she didn't know you couldn't do that if you didn't have years of training, and immediately broke both of her feet. And rather than calling for help, she was like, oh no, my mom's going to kill me because I can't wear these special super expensive orthotic shoes that they just bought me. So she scooted down the stairs, reached into a drawer, found two plastic spoons and a roll of black electrical tape, and taped the spoons to the bottom of her feet and wore her shoes and never told anyone about it ever. And when she was 20, she had cancer and they had to do scans of her whole body. And the doctor comes in and says, who set your feet? They did a good job. And her mom looks at her, and my mom, even at 20 years old, as an adult, is like looking at the doctor like, no, no, man, don't tell her about it. Like, those shoes I could wear when I was eight, like, so she could never know that, like, I fucked up hard or whatever. And my grandmother's like, what are you talking about? She never broke her feet. And the doctor like holds up the x-ray like, oh yeah, definitely broke her feet. She was so afraid of disappointing her mother, even as an adult, for something she did as a kid, that she knew as a parent, which she was terrified to be a parent, but she did it anyway. She knew that the one thing she didn't want for her kids was for us to be afraid of her. And I think she went so far in the opposite direction that she wanted us to be her best friends. And because of it, she sucked at adulting and discipline and all of these things. And so, which is what made it difficult when I'd go to another house who's, and I had these other mothers who were like, wait, what are you talking about? You can't just leave your room as a total shithole all the time. Like, you have to do your laundry and put your things away. And it was just so odd to kind of see all these different relationships. And so I guess as a parent, I'm trying to kind of piecemeal the things that worked really great about the way that my mom taught us about love and taught us about acceptance and taking care of other people emotionally and all of those things she was excellent at doing. But cleaning, you know, like putting food on the table, managing her money, making sure her bills were paid, like all of those things, she couldn't do those at all. And so I'm trying to kind of navigate parenthood to instill the good things without the bad things. And it's really hard to kind of pick and choose things. And I didn't realize how much at my mom's house, I had an older brother who was 3 years older than me. And it was just the three of us Monday to Friday. And he very much picked up the role as the dad figure right away. And he was always taking care of me because she was at work all the time. And the two of us were home alone a lot. And so he was like the boss and I was like the minion. And I did a lot of whatever he told me to do, even if it wasn't a good idea. And I didn't realize how much that affected me until I had two kids. And all of a sudden, my oldest was somebody's older brother. And when he starts kind of bossing his brother around, my youngest, when I see it, it like triggers me so hard. And I just scream at him and I'm like, what am I doing? I don't want to do that. But it's like, I can't not do it. I just see him kind of making his brother into his minion. And I'm like, no, that can't happen. And it's hard.
And yet that's also a pattern of siblings as well. So, you know, you can't avoid it completely. Our stories are so similar. It's hilarious because I've done the same. There's 4 years between my oldest and my youngest. And, and I've always been really hot on, no, you don't you don't interject, you don't like overpower, you don't this, you don't that, you know, almost to the extent where they didn't ever have enough of that rough and tumble kind of play and kind of working out how to have a conflict, you know, because I was so terrified they'd have a conflict and it would be horrible. But actually, you know, childhood is when we work out how to have a conflict and how we can, you know, have a blow up with somebody and then make up and it's going to be okay and get your point across and go too far and realize you've gone too far and all of those different things. So it's, it's hard. It's so hard. Incredible. It sounds like you're doing really, really well. If it's any consolation.
It's definitely not all, perfect, but it does make me happy when I see my youngest, like, he's only three and he will hold his own. I mean, when his brother is like, hey, let's go do this, you know, you should do this thing because I want you to. And he's like, no, I don't want to do that. And he just like holds his own. And I mean, I just see myself as a little kid and like, I never, ever had that, like, no, I'm going to do my own thing. It was like, whatever my brother wanted me to do, I was doing it. And like, he ended up getting me into a ton of trouble as a kid because he's like, yeah, let's go shoplift at the store. Or let's go do this or do that. And I would go along and just do it. And then I got in all this trouble. So I'm glad that my youngest is like, hell no, I'm holding my own. I'm my own person and I will not do whatever you want me to do just because you think it's cool. And so I definitely didn't teach him that. And I'm glad that he kind of got that on his own. It's been really interesting. I could talk to you all day long, but I don't have a ton of time left and I want to have time for our five questions. So is there anything else you want to throw in or talk about before we do the five questions?
I think, can you give me 2 minutes just to give you a little method? So I don't know if you noticed, but like you would be saying things that happened, like your mom breaking her feet and then having to take care of it herself. You know, we get rid of this essentially through our breath in so many ways. It's much more complicated than that, but it's also pretty simple. And so, you know, you're telling me that and I'm like trying not to kind of like breathe into wherever the microphone is on this computer, right? But, you know, when you're like diving into these, it's, you know, essentially kind of tremulous places, memories, experiences. One of the things I do a lot, and this is through the biofield tuning modality that I trained in, is just kind of ground myself, connect at the kind of electrical level. And I won't go into it too much more, but it's allowing yourself to connect to ground and connect to heavens, whatever you want to call it, cosmos, whatever. Really allow yourself to feel resourced through that. And like there's a place for this rubbish to go, right? And so when you breathe, allow yourself to breathe out either through the bottom of your feet or out through the top of your head. And so every time you go into that, because you're holding that still, right? You're holding like that. How horrible was that for your mom? How like intense was it to experience that? Why is it that she, you know, what was going on with your grandmother, your mother's mother, that she, you know, couldn't hold enough compassion that her kids knew that she, you know, your mom knew she could go to her with anything, like breaking her freaking toes, right? Mm-hmm. So when you feel that, and when you can feel that kind of rising in you, take a huge deep breath and really push it out of your body. Just let yourself let it go, because talking about it doesn't do enough. It's important, absolutely, but getting it out of the physiology and out of the energetic system, that's where my work is. And that's what I wanted to give to you, is absolutely breathe that stuff out. Don't keep holding on to it. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. It's funny because I have a huge tattoo on my back that I got years and years ago, and it's a tree, but the roots of the tree on the bottom look like a hand and down into the soil like this. And then the branch, all the branches that go up look like hands catching raindrops, and all the branches that go down look like they're dropping little seeds. So it's all like, you know, as you take things, you're giving other things away. And it's like, I got it years ago for that, thinking about that idea that, you know, as you take things from the earth and from the world and from other people, you have to give equal amounts away, and you have to grow flowers when it rains. Otherwise you live in the mud. And I like that the way that you describe that whole thing is that you kind of have like one hand up toward the sky and one hand down toward the ground, that you're kind of like taking and giving these things. And I was like, I have that on my body. What? Like,
so that's cool. The shamanic tree of life. I mean, it's, you know, it's a variation of it. And it really is that, you know, this is, you know, the more we, that's what I use anyway, is the cycles of nature in order to really ground ourselves. And there's an energetic impulse that defines everything, defines every possibility of form of action within the world. And if you train yourself to understand that and do the clearing work around that, then, you know, you can really fly with it, and be resourced. You know, we cut ourselves off from so much, and it's time for us to claim that belonging so that we can be totally resourced.
I love this show. I love it. Okay. So let's do our five questions before we run out of time. So it's five question time. I always do that, so I know where to end.
Okay.
Okay. Question number one, tell me about an experience that shaped who you are today.
Okay. This is weird that I've decided to do this one. But one of the reasons I studied genetics is because I was born with what is commonly known as a birth defect, which is a horrible name. But anyway, I was born with three fingers on my left hand. Doesn't affect my life that much. I'm really quite lucky. But it got me thinking so much as a kid. And I think it really took me like in these directions of like, how does this work? Like everything was like, how does that work? What, you know, why did that happen? And so this idea that DNA in me might have changed enough, although I don't think it was the DNA, but in any case, you know, when you're a kid, you're just looking for answers, aren't you? And it's like in trees and it's in birds and it's in, you know, the broccoli I was eating, and like, how does that work? So yes, my experience of being born with something that a lot of people think is debilitating really got me my kind of curiosity peaked, but also it brought a lot of humanity between me and almost anybody that I would meet. Because as soon as they would notice it, it's like it just kind of cut through the BS. Like you didn't get to see like, oh, you think of me as whatever, you know, the masks that we show through the clothes that we wear or whatever. It kind of cut through all the BS mm-hmm. and it made it easier for me to kind of meet people at a different level. I mean, you know, sometimes they were assholes, but most of the time I could make a joke about it or do this or do that. And it kind of brought something nicer. So anyway, that's my answer.
Oh, I love that.
I win. Yay. One down.
Okay. Number two, when you feel defeated or overcome, what do you tell yourself to keep going?
You know, I am better now than I ever have been my whole life at having a massive cry. So I don't necessarily tell myself something. I'll have a massive cry. I'll take an Epsom salt bath because that helps reset myself at an electrical level. And I actually am in a really, really good position now in the last couple of years where I recognize that I come from survivors, and they may have been freak shows in their life, have a lot of freak show stuff going on, but actually they were survivors and there's a resilience there. So I recognize that I am one of those survivors, and I am lucky to still be here and to have senses and a body and an opportunity to be in this life.
Awesome. All right. Number three, tell me about a way that you overcame a failure or a mistake and what you learned from it.
Ooh. So the thing I hold most, and I don't even know if I've processed it enough, so I might like, I might not. I had to leave my PhD. So I was doing a PhD in molecular biology and wound healing, but kind of wound healing stroke immunology. It was like fascinating and cool. It was horrible. I spent years doing research and had total green fingers. And as soon as I was doing it for my own PhD, it's like everything went to shit and I couldn't get anything to work. It was like 3 years of beating my head, and I'd gotten married then. And so I had all of those things that we talked about, like that sense of kind of like, oh, you know, just having, you know, to renegotiate who I am, right? And or re-understand. So I had to leave it. I just didn't write it. And that still devastates me because as a feminist, I really want that doctor in front of my name. And B, it was a lot of wasted money, and things like that. It's not cool for me to have done that. But what I did learn is that sometimes you do have to just let go of things, that sometimes it's okay it was okay for me to prioritize my own mental health at that point in time. In another lifetime, maybe it would have been different, but that's how it was.
My mom had a really similar experience. I'm not going to talk about it right now because I don't have enough time, but another time we will talk about that.
Excellent.
Okay. So number four, what one trait or habit is most responsible for keeping you on track?
I don't know. One trait or habit. What's responsible for keeping me on track? It sounds really naff, but breathing. Like, you know, just really breathing through experiences, really allowing myself to feel and to breathe it out. That's because it's terrifying. This work, this, you know, deciding that I'm going to be the one that helps people walk through this like no man's land, you know, to the other side, across all this pain, et cetera. It's a big deal. And sometimes I'm just like, geez, you know, maybe I could just stack groceries. You know, very highly trained grocery stacker, you know, and I'm not trying to in any way say that that's like a lesser job. Like part of me is just like, you know, I could really hold that quite well. So, to have the bravery to keep going through this is just to keep breathing out, you know, the doubts and the, the uncertainties, et cetera.
I love that. Okay. Last one. What's the best piece of advice you've ever gotten, and what advice would you give to other people?
Ooh. Gosh, I don't know. Best piece of advice I've ever gotten. I'm almost going to whisper this because I don't think my husband knows this. When I first, like you, right? So my husband's, you know, he's not had a cakewalk of a life per se, but nothing compared to, you know, and I think he would say that as well. When I was first dating him, I was just like, he's too nice. And I was working at Cambridge at the time with this gorgeous Polish woman, utterly amazing Polish woman. And I said something to her, you know, he's a bit nice, like, you know, at the beginning of the courtship. So I'm not really sure, you know, nice guys aren't for me. And she just turned around and looked at me. She was like, I think you're nuts. And it was that. So it's not really advice, but it was like actually somebody calling my bluff for my BS, you know, for like, what am I looking for? Somebody who's going to be abusive? That's ridiculous. And that made me kind of stop in my tracks and actually go, actually, I am worthy of somebody being nice. And actually I can hold that as well. So my advice would be follow the love and don't let your past experiences stop you from doing that.
I love that.
I know.
I said something.
I'm pretty pleased that I pulled that one out because I was like, I don't know.
It's funny. So, I actually said something so similar about my husband before we ever got together.
Yeah.
I ended up saying to a mutual friend of ours, you know, where are all the good guys? And she's like, well, you know, what about Burn? That's my husband's nickname. Everyone calls him Burn. And I said, Burn's the kind of guy you love forever. But if you're not ready to love someone forever, you don't fuck with that. Like, he deserves the very best. And if you're not on your very best, like, you can't break him. He's not broken. Okay. You can't go break him.
Breathe. Right? Let that go. Okay. Because yeah, you are absolutely always your best. We are all whole. It's just, we've got a lot of veils and fluff in between that makes us think we're not. So breathe all that out. Well done.
Awesome. Oh, I really want to talk to you all day long, but I have to go to the neurologist now.
Oh, bless. I hope everything's okay.
Just migraines. Trying to figure out the migraines story.
Give me a call and we can help.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show. We might have to do a part two. I think we should do a part two.
I've had just delightful actually speaking to you. Thank you so much. It's been really fun.
Thank you.
And so amazing, like all the different synchronicities. I shouldn't say that because it always happens, but like, yeah.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Can you tell everyone where they can find you online?
Sure. I am on www.robertaweber.co.uk. And I've got courses and memberships, etc., that I am putting out there. I'm kind of revamping my website right now, so it looks a little bit pish. So it's not, it's normal. So if you go immediately, don't think that's normal. But yeah, that's where you can find me.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being here, Roberta. I just have enjoyed this so much. And for everyone who's listening, you have been listening to the Reach the Stars podcast. I am your host, Jonna Willoughby-Lohr. If you love this show, review us on iTunes, give us the thumbs up and the subscribe on YouTube, share with your friends. And if you really want to be super awesome, you can back us on Patreon and help us keep funding the show. It's patreon.com/reachthestars. We will see you all next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye. Thanks for listening.
A single interaction has the power to change your life forever. This is a place for the stories of those moments. Stories of pursuing dreams, overcoming tragedy and failure, of coming back to life after so much of what feels like dying, of continuing on with only a vision as a map. This is the place where those moments live on. Come sit by the fire, look up at the stars, and be forever changed too.
Thank you for being with us on the Reach the Stars podcast. Our theme music is generously provided by Byrocratic. You can find him on bandcamp.com. Thank you to all of our current patrons, guests, and everyone else who helps make this dream a reality. We are so proud to be building this amazing community with all of you. If you love this podcast, please consider sharing with a friend, leaving a review on iTunes, and becoming a patron at www.patreon.com/reachthestars. Don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel to see the videos of these conversations. We'll see you next week. In the meantime, do something cool and tell us about it.